to Beyond the Ring, a podcast that covers all things in the stock show industry from the informative to the insane, starring Ryan Rash.
Some of y'all better be the most thankful I don't own a dragon.
And Dale Hummel.
Trends change, biology does not.
Now on with the show.
Welcome to Beyond the Ring. This is Dale Hummel, along with co-star Ryan Rash.
Hello, hello, hello.
We are recording on Tuesday night.
Yes.
Basically deadline night. 8 o'clock Central Time, Eastern Time, deadline. And the news flash is what, Ryan?
It's 6 o'clock. It's not 8 o'clock.
But no, anyway. The deadline. Not our time. Oh. The deadline.
There's a 2-week double ceasefire. They have to open the Strait of Hormuz or whatever. And there's several. They got a 10-point proposal from Iran, which they believe is workable. I'm just reading. I mean, this literally came out like 2 minutes ago.
I pulled up that 10-point plan, and I'm not opposed to it. Opening the strait on the U.S. part, immediate ending of the uranium enrichment we're aware of, and a 45-day temporary ceasefire to allow for negotiations. That doesn't look like 10 points, but on the Iran side,
I thought it said not 45 days, 2 weeks.
Okay, this was, I apologize. Yeah,
the bombing,
you're right.
And attack of Iran for a period of 2 weeks.
2 weeks. This was the original 10-point, not the updated one. This was actually a 15-point proposal. But it sounds like the gentleman from Pakistan came in to try to negotiate some of this. But Iran had wanted, in regards to sanctions, immediate and permanent lifting of all international sanctions, which they haven't had that since I've been alive, I don't think. Guarantees, formal guarantee that the U.S. and Israel will not attack again after a deal. And regional peace, a comprehensive end to regional hostilities and funding for reconstruction. So we need to go pay for them to rebuild their military that we blew up.
Do not ask me, sir. All I know is I'm reading a statement from him, and the end it says it is an honor to have this long-term problem close to resolution. That's the last slide.
Maybe you should look at some of his Truth Social posts. Those were very direct.
I don't even have Truth Social on my phone about, anymore.
This morning, I believe he came out, and I saw it. Somebody reposted on Facebook that if they don't come to an agreement, the end of the Iranian civilization is near, basically. I'm paraphrasing a little. His was probably harsher than that. And I believe he may have been making fun of Allah in the one before that.
There you go.
I don't know that there's a better way to talk to these people, because how many decades have we been trying to negotiate with them with no success? And when it seems to be the Biden or the Obama administration, we just send planes with cash. That worked out well.
It clearly worked out well because we're still in this problem.
Now they would like us to rebuild their military that we took out or pay for it. Maybe we should just send them our military equipment. I'm out. I want to talk about the bullshit that the regime has placed on their people, and I don't know their people well, but I'm under the impression there are many good people in Iran. They called, the local officials called them to stand on the bridges and come near all the nuclear plants and energy grids, everything they could. And it appears as though many did do that. I don't know what they were told in terms of going to do that, but if this would have continued and we were going to take out their power plants and their bridges, there would have been many Iranians killed, including children they were encouraging to come out. I don't think that works.
Doesn't sound like that was real smart of them.
And they're talking about UN war crimes if we take out civilians. When Iran launches a missile, say, into Tel Aviv, it's into downtown. It's into populated areas. They're not anywhere. They're just launching them. They're not targeting. If they're targeting, it's not working. But when one of those lands, it's rarely near a military base or military operation. It's in a populated area. So the hypocrisy in that is the most bullshit I've ever seen or heard of. I'm out on that. Do I think we should go in there and blow up the Iranian people that are on the bridges and in the park or the parking lots of nuclear power plants or near energy grids? I'm pretty hardcore about somebody does something wrong, just shoot them in the kneecap. But I don't know that I've got the stomach as a military personnel or the president of the United States to order that done. And I don't like the position that the regime has put those people in, or the local government. I call it crap. It's not good. I guess. I was thinking through another solution. If there wasn't an agreement reached, what does Trump do? What do you think he would have done, Ryan?
If you said he said he was going to end Iranian civilization, I'm going to take the man for his word about it.
I don't know how that would have sat in the world, internationally speaking. I don't know. I don't know how to set with our population here, but again, I'm not saying I don't know what the right thing to do is, but that there was no good answer there. I had mentioned to Holly that maybe he lets them believe he's coming in to take out the bridges and the power plants, and people aren't going to like to hear this. Instead, we do everything possible via bombing, boots on the ground. You hear those words, they aren't going to like that, to do whatever is needed to take out whatever regime is in place right now, instead of taking out the bridges and the nuclear plants. That would have been my backup plan. But let's be happy we came to some form of negotiation. History tells us what when negotiating with Iran.
Okay.
It says it never works. Doesn't. You're aware of this. Never. Not once. Ever. Go all the way back to the, maybe you don't remember the Iran hostage crisis. How many years they held some of our U.S. citizens. It's a train wreck. There is nothing that they're going to, nothing I can believe that they're going to tell us in any form of negotiation that I believe that they're going to adhere to. Nothing. So I have a feeling we're going to be right back in the same position. Maybe when the people leave the bridge, maybe Trump will go in and blow the shit out of it. I'm okay with that. And the nuclear plants. Just go in, wait until they all disperse, and just take it out. Well, when it's, this is war. This isn't let's play by this rule or that rule, because they damn sure aren't.
Please do not say it's war, because now we've already got articles of impeachment out on Trump because of war. Okay.
Well, I don't know what else you want to call it. It's a very one-sided war. Does that help?
I don't know what to tell you, sir. I don't mind the word war, but like, I'm not joking. Like, a 77-year-old senator has started articles of impeachment yesterday because he's getting challenged by younger candidates in the primary, and he thinks this will get him the Democratic nod in Connecticut.
Great. So he can die in office. That's where I'm at. I can't. I just can't anymore. I am out. And I'm concerned about the midterms. This oil. I'm not even talking about the war, the conflict, whatever that may be. But I can assure you, gas prices will not help the midterms.
No, I've said that for 4 weeks now, more, maybe longer. But
I talked briefly about Bob Lazar's movie or documentary that came out. It was technically Bob Lazar S4 movie/documentary. You don't know Bob Lazar, do you?
No.
So he was a gentleman that originally worked at a Los Alamos research laboratory. I assume it was government-led. In 1988, he was hired at what they call S4, a secret site within Area 51. You know where that is?
Yes.
North of Las Vegas, somewhere out in the desert.
Yes.
So he lives in Vegas. He gets on this jet every day along with other people. They fly him to Area 51. From Area 51, they take him to the section called S4. And this is where he claims, I don't know if I believe this Bob Lazar. I don't, but there's a lot of things that he brought up that he should not have known at that time that appear to be true now. So he was brought in to reverse engineer alien technology. This movie's narrated by Bob Lazar. I watched it. I paid $21, I believe, to get it on Amazon Prime. You can rent it for a little less, but I want to watch it a few times to make sure I don't miss anything. Uses realistic recreations of exclusive interviews with George Knapp and others to reveal tangible evidence of America's best kept secret. This was interesting to me. I was hoping for more, but it was interesting. And the fact that he comes up with a lot of information in terms of how the supposed alien ship moves goes very much with the Tic Tac story. There's too much there that he should not have been able to predict, I guess, is the only reason. Other than that, I'm with a lot of people out there. He may be lying about things, but interesting to me. There's one more thing that came to play today, and I talked about this earlier. There are multiple high-profile deaths to scientists and researchers that have been associated with some form of UAP, UFO information in the U.S. And we're talking a list here of 7 or 8 people that mysteriously die. Here's one that's dead in his car from carbon monoxide poisoning, ruled a suicide. Here's one that was a gunshot wound, ruled as suicide. There's the first one was 1959, this one 1971. Here's one in 1996. An engineer who claimed to have worked on secret underground bases was found dead in his apartment with something wrapped around his neck. Death was ruled a suicide. Recent disappearances, there's one that's been missing since February of 26, so very recently. Do not know where he is. And these are all documented scientists, professors that have worked with the UAP project. And is it coincidence? Yeah, but statistically, we're probably somewhere in that million to one. Somewhere in that range. But that is all I have for current events. You surely have some more.
No, you've depressed me enough. It's time to move on.
Okay. I would like to acknowledge our sponsor, ShowFresh H2O. You've heard me talk about the benefits of keeping show stock on water. Short of hauling your own water or short of hauling water from home, this is clearly a low-cost option with huge return. ShowFresh H2O can be purchased at your favorite show supply trailer or at swampfox.com. Green is gold. Did I come up with that title?
No, you came up with the topic, but not.
Oh, that's right. You know how many titles I've come up with?
Zero.
I bet there's been one or two. Mm-hmm. Maybe. Green is
five topics total, so I don't think you've come up with one or two.
Oh, please. We've talked about this, not in a whole episode. We're just getting through, and I guess online sale season is still going on for some goats, some sheep, and some pigs. But something we often read in a description, Ryan doesn't because he doesn't look at online sales. But a lot of times they will say, this is the green one of the group, or this one's green. What are they trying to tell us, Ryan?
That depends on who it is.
That's a good answer. Very good answer. So they concerned that they're physically the color green?
And no, in general, green means that they aren't as bloomy as the other ones. They're not as far along, all this other stuff. But like, you just get into it because I got a lot to say about this and I don't want to give it all away at the beginning. But anyhow.
I might as well. But playing on where you're at, I think it's to describe a animal that's thin. I call them outright skinny sometimes. Mm-hmm. And we have a battle here. We, as a breeder, may recognize this is a given genetic makeup that is fairly positive. This one may have gotten sick, been on a poor recip, whatever it may be that has stunted or pulled back their growth in body condition. But you also have animals. If you're not that breeder and you don't physically see this happening and know this is happening, there are animals that are just narrow and skinny by nature that are not going to change.
So just to give a little overview of this. So everything he just said, malnourished, stunted, sick, all this other stuff. So those are a lot of reasons that people will say, well, this is why this one's green. And then there are other reasons, like Dale said, that they're just not good and they're not converting, all this other stuff, but yet they're green. All of that, no matter which way you want to like sway it, does not sound positive to me.
I think you're taking a risk. So I'm gonna try to take as positive of a side as we can. And I often try to avoid using the term green when I'm doing online sale write-ups. I will come out and say this one is just flat skinny. The growth has been stunted. Words like that. The first couple years that we were raising goats of any number, we had what we call the peanut pen. And we still have them today. We just don't seem to have as much of a problem with it. And maybe that's because we're doing a better job managing our recips or something. So this peanut pen, Ryan, there would be 5%, maybe in the beginning, 10% of the goats born at weaning time when we'd go from the kidding barn and bring them to our home farm. You would have, I'm going to say 10%, just to throw a number out there, that were third to half of the size of the average animal. I mean, not just skinny, they were physically half the size. In my mind, if you look at that pen, if you were to walk in the barn or anybody with livestock experience at that moment and look at the pen, you'd say, this is a pen of sale barn goats that you're probably going to get somewhere between $5 and $10 a head if there's anybody there willing to spend that much. They look that bad. because I am terrible about giving older children of mine the opportunity to do better in the show ring, as we brought out a few episodes ago, those goats would go to Katie. And I believe we told the story that one of them ends up winning Louisville.
Correct.
And she was maybe 9 years old at the time. So we thought these little goats would be a good idea. Once some of those goats turn the corner, and whatever reason it would be, and I can't say it was always a bad recip. That's what everybody wants to claim in an online sale. I think it's more of a nutritional stunting for whatever reason. They weren't eating, didn't feel well. I don't know, had some type of bug, maybe severe diarrhea, scours. I don't know. I wish I could tell you exactly what would stunt some of these. And I'm even gonna go on a side note here. That pen of goats, given time, I'm not saying every one of them, but most of them would mature significantly better than what I could ever have anticipated, as example by the goat that Katie showed at Louisville. So now we hold those goats off and sell them at the very end of our sale season. And some we may not even put online because it's so hard to explain. We sent a goat to a family here in Illinois in December. That goat was a springborn. So she's about a year old right now. When we sent her to that family in December, she was all of maybe 25, 30 pounds. It's very little for that age. She has done well since December, and that goat will be shown, and she looks like a rock star. I mean, possibly a show doe that, if you do not consider her age, she's one of the best ones out there. So there are, I don't know if I call those, I don't even call those goats green, Ryan. They're so stunted. They're borderline midget looking, dwarf looking, significantly. I want to use a new term for ours. I'm just going to call them the littles or the smalls. They're not green. They're just flat, stunted, little. They have not performed well, period.
Now you're racist and discriminatory. That's great.
Something like that. So they're now at the same time, if you were to think, well, that was a nutritional stunt, or they were stunted nutritionally, or had a disease or whatever it may be, a pathogen of some sort, you would think, well, there may be some long-term implications of that. And we have not necessarily noticed any. And this shocks me, because I would predict and say we've got a dozen goats in that pen, that there's going to be some that never grow. But if we keep them around long enough, they seem to come on. And to the point that they look so good later, I'm not opposed, if I knew how to do it, to physically stunt those animals and create more peanut pin.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
That doesn't sound right, but I'm telling you, those things mature well. Now, that's just one example at our place with our genetics, under our pathogen load, all of those things. I doubt that crosses species or even other farms. I don't know. Maybe some other listeners can call in or not call in, text in on or Facebook message.
This isn't Dr. Ruth. Nobody's calling in here.
We should give them your number so they could. I have it here if you'd like me to.
Now that we have gone way, way off course.
Way off course. I had to give the positive. Now we can beat up on it the rest.
No, you didn't even give the positive, because you gave one example of something that you haven't. The positive about green animals, if you just want to get real, real simple, is normally because they are skinny. They are cheaper.
Except when you identify it as a skinny sleeper in the sale, then all of a sudden what happens?
No, not always.
A lot of times. I see it many times on ours. Many. Generally speaking, they are cheaper. You're rolling the dice and hope.
No, I'm not even saying that, but they are cheaper animals. That is why the title is Green as Gold, and lots of people do look for those animals because they get a better deal or something like that. And all that is baked into it. And that's fine. Dale argues with me on this, and I will stand by this and say that I am correct and he is wrong. He does not believe that judges or people can look through hair when evaluating animals, whether they're in the show ring or whether you're looking at them to buy.
Not do it well. Not that they can't look through it, but not do it well.
I call bullshit on that, because I do it. I've done it for so many years, buying 95% of our steers to be slick. My eye is trained differently than other people.
Yours would be more, you would be much more likely having that experience. How many people have that experience that are judging shows?
I'm not saying everybody, but I'm just telling you, I call bullshit on what you say.
I also believed, relative to this topic, that there are people that specifically go out and look and evaluate animals that are considered green and take those risks more than other people. And because they do, I think their eye is more trained. And I also think because they have put more of those animals on feed than the average feeder, that they probably have more success in this because they've been through all the experiences and know more of how to treat them, how to get them to where they need to be and all this other stuff. But they don't ever say that in the sale write-up.
I would agree with all of what you're saying there, other than I do believe that people in general, not just judges, I can assure you goats, before we take the hair off, clipping for a sale, I could turn you into a penny. You can tell me good from bad, but that's about it. And our goats are hairier than most, and it's more difficult. And we do sort our keeper does out without keeping them. So obviously we have some faith that we can read that, having done it for a long period of time. But in general, I think when we see a hair steer in a show, I'm going to use cattle as an example, we could evaluate that one and say, wow, that's a pretty good hair steer. Where does this one fit in if we take the hair off? I think a lot of people would miss it. And I'm not saying everybody, and I think you have a unique experience. And because of your life experience buying steers and hair that you're going to show as slicks, that, I mean, you kind of have to adapt and learn. But a lot of people don't have that experience. And it's hair, a good fit job in hair will fool more judges than not. I'm gonna throw that right out there, period. So
this is also what I'm saying about this. I think people that do look specifically for what we consider green animals and then have more experience feeding them, then I think their success rate with going down this path is better than the average person. And again, that's not in the sell write-up. They don't ever say that. And
no, and they may cite an example that they've had, just like I talked about. We've had, I'm not going to call ours green. I'm going to call them flat out stunted. Stunted, period. Tinies, littles. They're not just skinny. They're just little. Sometimes when I think of green, then maybe they're of a similar frame size of their contemporaries, but significantly lighter muscle, no body condition, just not converting calories or not getting enough feed for some reason.
Can I continue?
Please do.
Jesus Christ. And not saying that all people that sell animals are not honest. I think the majority of them try to be, want to be, all this other stuff. It also, you're taking, whether it is a breeder or a broker that bought this animal from somebody else, you are, and you're seeing this animal that is behind the other animals, and they said, well, that one had a bad recip, or that one got, you know, sick, or, you know, whatever the thousand reasons. You are taking that at face value, which maybe that's exactly right. Maybe it's complete bullshit. You don't know. And that people also don't factor into that part. And so why I think that if you are bargain shopping, the green thing can be beneficial. I'm also going to say that, first off, there is a reason that that one is not at the same spot with the other ones are. And not saying that can't be overcome, but there is a reason for that. And we need to remember that. That needs to resonate with people. There is a reason this one is behind. There is a reason this one is skinny. And as we said at the beginning, maybe it did get sick. Maybe it did have a bad reason. Maybe it just doesn't convert feed well. That doesn't mean it's green. That just means it's going to be a problem.
Let's term that one sickly.
Sickly. There are, just like people, there are people that stay sick. There are animals that stay sick. All of those things. My point is, before you go all in on, you know, we can get these green ones and they'll, like, Dale's giving you this success story on his, on all these
things. But I do not call those green.
Well, whatever. And the guy selling it or the gal selling it say, well, the same thing happened because the cow sucks. She doesn't milk worth shit. But the full brother last year went into a good home and, you know, won yada, yada, yada. That's
and
all
it may great, be, and great. It may be true.
And it very well may be true. I'm not saying it's not. I'm also not saying that you don't know that.
I'm gonna throw a number out there of 50% of the green ones that are truly identified in their write-up as green ever come out of being green. They 50% stayed green all their life.
So that was what I was going to tell you. And I am not, Brant and I, we do not see the same on this. Brant is about green animals and things
because
like that.
Because he is writing the check.
I am not. I want the one that's whatever. And I was going to say, I have a different buying experience than most people. Because
it's what, if you don't have a budget, why would you buy green one?
Okay, that's what I'm trying to explain. So obviously, I am going to be a little more negative on this topic than most people. But I'm not saying that we'd ever put a green one on feed. I'm not saying I didn't ever buy a green one, all this other stuff.
You just put expensive green ones on feed.
But I will tell you that I think 50% is about dead on. Some of those worked out.
That's just a throw it out. But I think it's close.
In my experience, 50% is, I mean, maybe a little high, but pretty accurate. And when I'm saying they work out, I'm saying they finally do catch up. I'm not saying they become the grand champion, but finally you can get them there.
Get them, use the term, get them to their genetic potential.
Right. With the rest of them that they were behind. And so if you want to roll the dice at 50-50, that's fine. Let's get it. But I think that needs to be in there. And then the other thing, and the reason that I truly have more bias against these animals than anything else is because I think a big part of this for most families, not all families, but most families, is they want to show them more than once. And so when you buy the green one, you're not going to get to take that one to nearly as many shows as the one that is bloomy and show ring ready to go at sale time, because you're going to have to baby that one and get it caught up and all this other stuff. And there's just all these other things that come with it. So you're getting robbed of some of the showing experience with that animal. And nobody talks about that either in your write-ups. Not even you, jackass.
I don't use the term green. I call them other things.
Oh, my God. Saint Dale of
If we have one that I think is truly that good and is stunted, skinny, whatever you want to call it, because it's generally not going to bring what I think it's worth, those would be some of the ones that we would put in our children's pen when we were showing more goats. We wouldn't make them all that way because they're too high risk. But occasionally we'd put those in, and I'm going to say on those, and these aren't the little littles, just these are the truly little skinnier ones that if you want to use the term green, you could. I'm going to say half the time they make it. Half the time they just stay narrow. It just is what it is. But I'm with you. I think when you're buying that green animal, obviously you're getting a better value. And you talked about that. You're not buying, they're not in that picture, that video, they're not at 12 o'clock by any means. So their better days assumably are ahead of them, where some people feed well enough, and we're a push on these goats once they're weaned to try to get enough bloom on them. Some of these baby pig feeding operations, I mean, they're so good at feeding those little babies. I mean, if you could only get them to look like that again at some point, and they should, but they're being very micromanaged. And I won't tell you, we're not trying to micromanage our goats. They're fed in groups, but they're fed hard. And that's to get them closer to look a little more muscular, to show some body condition, or what people refer to as bloom, so they'll picture well. And we usually, if we give them 2 to 3 weeks post-weaning, we can get pretty close to that. But it means let's get them on feed and let's hope those recips did well. Everything has to go well.
Right. On the value part, I'm not going to say that they're not normally more reasonable price. They are. I think that also when you're buying into this theory, you also have to realize that that's going to be a higher maintenance animal during the feeding period. And for that, not saying that costs anything, but you're always going to have to baby that one, tweak that one, do all these things, all this other stuff. If that doesn't bother you, whatever. Now, there is also the case that if it was sick, it was this, all this other stuff, maybe you're still going to have to doctor it when it gets home. Maybe there's going to be other complications, all this other stuff. So like one thing can turn into multiple things. And so then the $5,000, $1,500 that you saved by buying the green animal, maybe that gets ate up in medicine or something else. I'm not against this. I'm just saying I don't think people look at all the things that go with it. or talk about all the things that go with it. They're just like, oh, we can get that green one and we can make this work.
It's that hope that here's one that fits springs the budget, eternal. That might work. And that what you were talking about, there could be a hidden health risk that we never discover, and it just stays that way. And there's other green livestock that are sold. You get them home, worm them, put them on a different feed, put them in a different environment, and you just feed and they thrive. So
yeah, absolutely.
I'm just putting more risk there. I think those that year after year go out searching for those have more experience looking at them. Maybe they have a better relationship with those breeders they're buying from that can truly tell you, hey, is this one just a little skinny? Did the milk not come from the recip or the mother for real? Or is this just a skinny narrow one? I think the breeder is probably going to be able to give you a better idea. I could go out there and sort those and say, okay, here's a green one that's probably not going to make it. Here's a green one, stunted one, whatever we call them, that as long as you have enough time and you're not trying to show it next month, yeah, you're going to be in pretty good shape. You actually may be able to show this thing at a year plus of age and he looks like a rock star or she. So I it goes both ways, but I think the term green is used a lot.
Right. And it's just a term and it is what it is, but I don't want to discourage anybody from putting a green one on feed or all this other stuff. But the thing that I'm trying to point out here is when you hear of the stories about green animals, you only hear the success stories. You don't hear when it didn't work out worth it, ever. Never is that story shared with anyone. But you do hear of the one that was a bad recip, that got it home, came back, whatever, all this stuff, and went on. So every time you hear about someone saying, oh, that's green animal, there's a success story involved with it because they don't ever tell you about the disasters. And that, I'm not just saying the brokers, the breeders, whatever. I'm talking about the feeders too. You never hear somebody say, yeah, I took a chance on this green one. And let me tell you, it just did not work out worth it. Bleep, 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 bleep. Have you ever heard that, Dale? No, you haven't.
Occasionally, but not very often.
And so the reason I'm being the jackass on this topic is because I think those things need to be brought out. Because it is probably, just as Dale said, about 50-50. And that's okay. But when you only hear all the glowing tributes to buying the green ones, and you don't hear the disaster stories, it makes buying the green ones sound a lot more intriguing.
And there, you'll hear both. I can remember years ago.
I've heard maybe two in my life.
I'm going to give you a couple examples here. I was helping a family.
What I say, two. They probably both came from Dale.
Helping a family looking for show barrows for Illinois State Fair. Near the last lot, and it was Cobb Sale in Arkansas. Like, they might have had 150 pigs on there. This one's 145th.
Now we're going to get little. Sued.
And it was skinny, but built right, just skinny. I don't know if they called it green. I don't even know if they put a description on it. Bought the pig for $450. Threw him on feed for this family. He wins the Illinois State Fair. There's your green success story. People are happy to hear that. And Ryan, you're going to...
And that is more times than not the stories that you hear associated with
green. Now I'm going to give you the other one that you'll feel so good about. And I'm
trying to feel good. I'm just saying, well, this I'm bringing is what up you, the I'm just telling you, nobody talks about.
I am telling you're going to this time. So we've bought green sheep for my nephews. I've bought a lot of green animals on a budget. Not as tight of a budget, but chose to buy a green animal here a year or so ago, Ryan.
Terrible ass shorthorn steer a year ago.
There. That's the one that I was going at. He was built well enough, but I mean, really skinny. There's no question in my mind he did not have much body condition on him. And with that, you're rolling the dice. I mean, he's narrow, he's skinny, all of those things. If you feed him, will he come around? He did not come around enough, even with feed supplements and help. It isn't going to happen. And I guarantee you those things are out there. And I get it.
Why me and Katie had a crossbred steer and Dale had a shorthorn.
Oh my. Does Brant ever, do you ever allow him? Does he ever just go buy that green one?
Oh yes. Yes, absolutely. And
do they mature okay sometimes?
Sometimes.
Has he bought some that haven't?
Yes. But I mean, I think that there is a little bit of an art to both the feeding and the looking for them. And if you've had those experiences more than other people, then, you know, that part is in it. But it seems like to me that whenever they are talked about in sales or when you're buying them or the stories afterwards, it all seems very one-sided to me that you hear all of the successes and you never hear about the other half that, you know what? They were skinny, they stayed skinny, and they didn't work out. Like, no one tells those stories.
Well, they're not near as fun to tell.
Exactly. But, so that's what I'm saying. There's a whole lot of romance around finding this green animal, but there's also the reality that doesn't ever get told. And that's why when you wanted to have this topic, I was like, oh, get with it. I'm more than happy to talk about it.
Guess what we're forgetting? I'm going to say 50% of the animals that are not green, that are purchased as show stock, online, not online, private, auction, I don't care what. I'm going to tell you 50% of those don't turn out either.
They probably don't meet the goals that they want. You know, I agree with that. Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is, but I know that those that have done it for many years, like you said, that are on a restricted budget or a budget of any sort, sometimes with where prices are in the show stock industry, that may be their only chance to get to the level they want to get to. And they're willing to take that risk.
Right. And that's fine. I am being the jackass on this topic because the bad parts of this never get brought out. It's always the success stories. That's why when you brought this up, I was like, oh yeah, I'll talk about this. And then there is one other thing that no one has ever talked about that I'm going to talk about. So you buy this animal or you breed this animal or sell this animal. They take it home. And whether it gets good enough or not, in your mind, when you see it every day, it's going to get better and it's going to progress probably at sometimes at a more rapid rate than the ones that came in bloomy as hell.
And at least change more.
Change more. Yes. Yes. I guess that's the word I should have used. Change more. And all that's great and all that's wonderful. And you see more change and you see more progress and all this other stuff. Doesn't mean that that one is better than the other ones in the barn. But not more importantly,
exceeds the other ones, right. But yes.
But more importantly, you never hear this side. You know what? The judge doesn't have a before and after picture. Okay?
But have you been the judge, and I have, when you walk by or say hi, usually a very young showman will tell you things you really don't even need to hear.
Right. That's what I'm getting at.
Yes.
The judge doesn't have a before or after picture. Okay, that doesn't come into play. The judge is judging what's happening today. And, you know, sometimes you say, hello, how are you doing, whatever. Oh, well, this is my calf, you know, Spider-Man, and he broke his leg or what. I've heard it all and all this other stuff. Or when, after the show, people are coming up and not last weekend, but in recent, I'm going to say 6 months, I've had two or three people say, and they didn't win, but they got along and they're like, well, you just have no idea what it took. This one was this and this and this. And we got so close. If you would have just seen this one when we started, it really doesn't matter to me or any other judge because there is no before and after part to this. You are judging.
It's not how much change.
Right. You are judging what is in that ring and its contemporaries that day. But because I hear that a lot as a judge. Oh, well, this one, you know, was sick for 6 months and all this other stuff. I hear that probably every other show that I judge, something along those lines.
That's because they know you're pretty sympathetic. That's why they tell you.
Yeah, that's it. And so I get the progress that you have made with that animal at home, and that is great. And people overcome stuff with animals every year, and that is wonderful. It still does not matter in the end in that arena. And a lot of times people forget that part. I mean, I'm not saying they forget it, but it glazes over or something in their mind, because I wouldn't hear this as much as I did if they realized it didn't matter. Do you at least understand what I'm saying, Dale?
I do. I hope our listeners do.
And I'm not saying that you can't share those stories or anything like that, but in the end, it's what's out there that day. It doesn't matter how far they came. And yeah. And so that is a part that never gets mentioned in the green animal regalia of it all, that the judge is not going to see a picture when it was skinny and whatever. And oh my God, look how far it has come. You're right. You deserve the banner because of everything you got out of this one. That's never going to happen, people.
There are cases the judge may get on the microphone and say, hey, this one's the green one in the class. And I think this one's going to look really good in a few months.
No, I say that almost every show. I will say, you know, more days on feed. This one's going to be competitive. This one is green, snake skinny, all this other stuff. I think this one is going to get better. But I have also never said, I think that one's going to win the show in 3 months. But I do think there's at least one every show that I talk about it being green in terms of condition. And I mean, I don't know why it's green, but I know it's out there and it's skinny and green, but it's got the right parts and pieces. And with more days on feed, that thing's going to become more competitive.
It may be unhealthy. It may not being fed enough. It may not be absorbing the nutrients. A lot of things could be there. But many, many things.
I say that probably at least once a show. And when I say those statements, those are true. I do think that the further it goes down the feeding process, if it responds, it will become more competitive. Now, also, let me preface this by telling you, more times than not, that animal's at the towards the bottom of the class when I say it.
When others say it, they might be a little higher. So everybody's going to be a little
different. Right. And there have been a very limited times where I just tell you, there have been times where I have used a skinny green one to win the whole damn show because I thought that thing was so good. I mean, he was just 512 pounds and there were heavier cattle there. And so, yeah, I mean, it happens, but I'm just saying it's not the norm.
Do you believe that your opinion on buying green ones could be a little skewed because of your background?
I said that already.
So let's cut the people like Brandt a little
slack. I'm not. The only reason that I wanted to do this topic is because I know my opinion is skewed. That is fine. And I admitted that already. But also, you don't hear about the other stuff.
I'm with you. I got it.
I am not discouraging anybody from taking a chance. I have taken chances on animals, even though you may not believe it. I have taken chances on skinny animals. And I am telling you about maybe not half, but close to half. Close enough that I'll say, you know what? Those things got to a point where I thought that we could get what we needed out of them in the end goal. And the other half, they never went to the show they were intended to go to. So that part is in it. I think the success stories are great. I think it is amazing, all that stuff. I just don't think you ever hear the other shoe that drops. And that's why I was like, yes, I will talk about this. I have no problem talking about this because I will point out the other stuff. You say all the times that you have to be the bad one, all this other stuff. Well, I'm the one being Satan today. So there you go.
I do want to caution our listeners, potential future buyers and current buyers of livestock, that if the breeder is writing in there he's green and skinny or whatever you want to call it, I think there's even more of a reason for you to reach out and have a discussion with that broker or breeder, whoever's selling it. They may lie to you, but if you just blindly go on there and buy that one under those conditions, your odds may get less than 50%.
Well, and I'm going to say this too. The people that I know that have success putting green animals on feed, in almost 99% of those circumstances, that buyer saw that animal live. They could assess better the health of the animal, the condition of the animal, all of the, if there was a problem early, all this, they could do a much better job assessing how far you had to go, if the animal looks healthy now, all this other stuff that you can't really decipher in a picture or a video online. And that was the final point that I wanted to make. I'm glad that you brought it up, because I think that's a big part of it too. And I know that everybody can't get to see them, but the people that I know that have success with this, and I do know people that have success in buying great animals, all of them have seen the animal live and been able to make a true assessment of where that animal is at the point that they purchased it.
In addition to hopefully having a relationship with the person that's selling it, that has a reason to want to keep you happy.
Right. But that's a part that never gets brought up too. The people that I know that have success with this, they've seen it in person.
Yes. Agreed. I think this was good. Very good. Are you concluded on the main topic? Would you like me to move forward?
Yes, I have been the jackass and Satan for the week. So don't ever tell me that you're the one that always...
That would be Trump. Trump has been the jackass. Satan was what most people would say. I think he's been speaking very honest for the week. But let's go to our question and answer. We do not. I had a gentleman reach out that I was pretty excited about. I forgot to get back to him until today. So I don't have that material, or I haven't had that conversation. So hopefully next week you'll have your sponsor for question and answer. I just need to maybe dig through a few emails and get in gear. I gave up
your number because somebody
that's probably
wanted
the one that texted me.
I'm just saying, I gave it out this week. They're like, we need to. What I was like, that's all Dale Hummel. Here's his number.
So I noticed there was Facebook messages or emails that I hadn't maybe opened. And finally, they text me probably because they called you. But I did try to get back to him. So that's good. The first one comes from Amber, I believe. I'm not sure who it comes from. Listen to your Show Ring Attire podcast. That was a long time ago, wasn't it?
Jesus.
God, from December. Point? So I thought longer. Yeah. Listen to your Show Ring Attire podcast from December. If the show provides a required to wear t-shirt, should the kid wear a long sleeve button down underneath or just the t-shirt?
Just the t-shirt. I think you look ridiculous when you...
I'm with you. And I've seen both. And I don't, and as a judge, also, I really don't care either way. But.
And I'm going to tell you why I care. First off, I think shows should not do that whatsoever at all, because if you want to give the kids a t-shirt that they can take home, great. Don't make them showing it. T-shirts look sloppy. They just do. You can't iron them. You can't do any of that. They just look sloppy. And they're all short sleeves and all this other stuff. But the reason that shows do this is because they want everybody to be in the same shirt. So the judge can't be told that, you know, Charlie's going to have on a green and pink checkerboard shirt, and that's the one that can win. That's the theory behind it. I'm just telling you, at this day and age now, people, they're not relying on a checkerboard shirt if that's what they're doing. Okay? But I think it's ridiculous. All the junior nationals do it. I hate it. I despise it. Whatever.
Do you have an opinion on this, Brian?
Yes, I do. I have a big one. I think they should all be outlawed from that. But if that is what the show wants you to do, and that is the rule that the show has put in, that everybody needs to show in the same t-shirt, then you putting on a different shirt underneath it is, in essence, while you're never going to get called out for it, you're breaking or bending the rule. And I think it looks dumb.
And they could say, we want them to wear them because we want our sponsors out there in the public that are on.
You know what? Give them a banner and put it in the ring and give them the t-shirt and tell them to wear it at home.
I love it. I love it. Good answer. I don't even need to tune in. You got this. The next one is anonymous.
Oh, that's
great. Aren't you proud? I read that part.
Yeah, I bet they're proud.
And I'm going to paraphrase here something huge. So bear with me. I just returned from a popular Oklahoma show. That doesn't give it away, right?
Well, I mean, I don't know when this was set, but...
It was fairly recent. And many crossbreds, that we're talking about pigs, many crossbreds were shown as pures. When is enough enough? I did a little bit of research, And I could be wrong because I didn't dig deep. I shot two texts out there. And I'm only going to assume OIE. Maybe I shouldn't. But it sounds like at OIE, the Yorks and Hamps require papers and the others are classified. That does seem a little odd to me, I guess. But I'm going to assume, and I don't have to assume, he stated the breed. I'm not going to come into it because I don't know about this and I don't want to.
But it wasn't a York or a Hamp, is what you're saying.
Correct.
Oh, there you go.
I don't want to throw a dart at some child or anything like that. So because I don't know. This person could be upset and just throwing it. I don't know. So I'm being very cautious with this one. I'm going to go out on a limb here. If you have, and this is a big if, people that are fairly knowledgeable classifying, I would probably take that before a damn piece of paper.
See, we talked about classification in Texas just recently and whatever, all this other stuff. I'm telling you right now that I think, even though I am the first one to tell you, and I said this, I think it was just last week, that in a lot of ways, the classifiers are more important than the judge because they decide who actually gets to show in that breed. I would take classification over papers any day because anybody can slap a set of papers on an animal and then put an ear notch or whatever else on that animal, and then it's going to get in the ring. Now,
not any longer at the Illinois State Fair Pig Show. Fugit has got it locked down.
What has he done?
Just kidding.
Okay. It's going to get in the ring. It's going to show. If it wins, will they pull hair, test it? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But unless there is a show that makes you submit DNA prior to going to the show, they run it, they test it, they make sure that it's a purebred, all this other stuff.
Comes back pure. Yeah, right. It would take a lot.
And I don't know of any show that does that. Any show that does do it, please message us and let us know because I will give you props. Otherwise, anybody can slap a set of papers on an animal, make an ear notch stick, put an ear tag in it, whatever it takes. And then that animal's going to get to show regardless. At least in the classification thing, those three people who have been recruited and hired to hopefully be honest and keep the breeds within the ramifications of what is that show says is a...
Which is an ever-moving target.
Right, is a shorthorn steer or a natural colored ewe or, you know, a Berkshire hog, whatever it is, at least the same three people are deciding it, hopefully being honest and forthright about it, instead of a certain set of people just putting papers on an animal and saying, go out there and kick their ass. That is my opinion.
Agreed. Agreed, agreed, agreed. I have one minor exception because of what I'm going to call fetal programming, epigenetics. We're going to go down that trail just a moment. We know that clones come out with different colors, that
yes,
a uterine environment can turn on and off pigmentation, if I want to simplify the pigmentation genes. So in that scenario, it is possible that that animal from purebred genetics, especially if you're using a recip, that things are going to come out different. And I get it. Those could maybe have, I don't know, depends on the association, whether they're allowed to be papered or not. But I don't doubt in some cases they are real. They would not classify because of whatever difference there was in that uterine environment that may have triggered not only color pigmentation, but other things. So there are, very, very, very few exceptions to those things. But I'm with you, Ryan. Unless we're going to go down the DNA route, and maybe some associations are willing to work with the shows and do that. And if we have DNA parentage testing on file in the NSR where you can determine what percentage York or Hamp and they draw a line on what that number is, that's the only way the papers have any value is the best way for me to look at it. And I'm not opposed, maybe at these big shows where they sell for a lot, if it is a papered show and claims to be a Hampshire or whatever it may be, or an Angus steer or whatever, I'm not opposed to matching that with their parental DNA or the breed specific DNA saying it has to be at this percentage to be a registered purebred. I'm okay with that. I just I don't think that people are going to go to that point. And this is done after the show, after the banners are handed out, after the glory on social media, all those things.
Right.
So at that point, guess what? Few people are even going to know about it.
Right.
So very good. I like that. That was a good question. It was very, very paraphrased, but good question. Sam has the last question. I listened to last week's podcast, and I am curious if you think breeders that sell show stock would be willing to give you information such as what they were being fed, vaccination records, fecal results, or what parasite management was implemented. I don't, what did we talk about last week? I don't know how it relates. I don't even remember. Think for yourself now.
I guess I also, Dale, again, you said you opened a whole bunch of ones that you don't know when it was, so it doesn't matter. But we've talked about this before. So, I mean, if it was last week's or whatever, we talked about before.
I thought this was a recent one, but may not have been.
I mean, I think they should, especially if you ask them. I think that most people, overwhelming amount of people, would give you that information. If they don't, that's kind of a red flag. And so, yeah, I would say if they don't give you that information, unless they just don't have it, which they should at least know what they've been feeding them and if what they've been vaccinated for. I mean, I don't know many people that run fecals other than Dale. I'm just going to be super honest. But anyhow, whatever information they have, I think they should give to you. And if they don't, that is a red flag to me. I bet that was last week because we did starting over again. So I bet it was from.
You know what? That you're correct. So I get people that will call and say, hey, what feed, even before they buy something, will sometimes ask this information. And I can't imagine that breeders wouldn't give that information out. So I put it a little bit on the buyer's end that they need to ask. Never be afraid to ask. The worst case scenario is they don't answer you. If that's the case, then you just don't buy from them next year. But yeah, no, I think very good. So that was good. There, I just got a Fox News notification, Ryan.
Right.
We have successfully sent astronauts and they went around the moon and now they're coming home.
Oh, wonderful.
How is that a big deal when we put men on the moon 75, 100 years ago or whatever it was, multiple times?
Let it go, Elsa. Let it go. I cannot.
I don't believe we had power windows or air conditioning in our cars when we put people on the moon. I really don't. Okay. And I got to pull one more thing up before we go because I'm getting all kinds of notifications on my Robinhood account, which has a lot of crypto and things
Robinhood.
In it. That is a trading, stock trading, crypto trading account. I think Trump's treaty calmed people for a moment. I didn't open it. Maybe I'm being too optimistic that things are going up because we're not taking Iran into the Stone Age, is my guess. But with that, I greatly appreciate. This was good, Ryan. You knew it was going to be good. You were excited about this one. And I think it was a very, very good topic. I hope all of you out there enjoyed the episode. Until next week,
y'all come back now. You hear?